You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, a USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Lucky Show number 13 with our guest today, former Indianapolis head football coach Chuck Pagano, more affectionately known within coaching circles as Pags. And Chuck, we feature greatly accomplished people with an even greater testimony, and I don't know any better person in America than you who would fit this bill. So welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to see you. Great to be on with you guys.
Yes, sir. So, you know, when I see your picture or that Ed Reed clip that comes on that's become popular, it really makes me smile, you know, because of what you have survived. And then in the process of surviving, becoming nationally known for your coaching success. So what you've accomplished is really amazing. And, basically when I coach with you a couple of places, I was always happy anyway, because of your personality always made me happy when I was around you. But those things are incredible. And I just praise God for getting you through some of the challenges, of course, that you had, and which the whole United States of America is pretty much familiar with. And what I want to do is just kind of go through your career a little bit. I'm going to go through your resume very quickly here, and then I'll ask you a question or two. But you played defensive back at Wyoming. You went to USC as a GA and then Miami as a GA. Went to Boise State from there as outside linebacker coach. You came to East Carolina University from there as a DB coach. You decided to leave and go out to UNLV as the and became a defensive coordinator. And then you came back to ECU, and that's when we spent a few years together there. And then from there, you left and went to Miami, coached DBs and special teams, and had great success there. And then you went to the Browns with Butch Davis. Then from there to the Raiders, then back to UNC Chapel Hill as a defensive coordinator under Butch. And that's where we spent some more time together on the same staff. And then you left and went to the Raiders as a DB coach, and then the DC, and then went to the Colts as the head coach with a record of 56 and 46, counting the playoff games. And then finished your career with the Bears as a defensive coordinator, and then retired. And so here's my question. Talk a little bit about, if you would, can you talk a little bit about your background and your influences growing up that got you to Wyoming as a player first?
Yeah, a lot of moves on that journey, like any of us, right? Decide to choose this profession as our careers and put food on the table. But grew up in a football family, as you know, Jeff, right? And Dad was a high school coach in Colorado. And so I grew up around ball and the locker room and all those kind of things. And so he was obviously one of the first ones, had a huge impact, you know, on me and thought process, and watching him coach at the high school level as a, you know, as a young person, and hang out at the, you know, up at the school and watch film and see how he, you know, developed the relationships with the players and how he coached, what his style was, what he stood for. You know, culture wasn't a big word, you know, back then, but, you know, we were always going to be a, you know, a disciplined, physical football team. But it really started, you know, with, you know, building relationships and building that trust. And I was very, very fortunate. All those spots that you mentioned along my journey, I was around such great men, such great leaders. You know, Ted Tolner was my first boss at the college level. Played for three different, you know, coaches in college, Bill Lewis, Pat Dye, and Al Kincaid, and had a bunch of great position coaches. Rocky Long, you know that name, Rocky Long.
Yeah.
Still coaching to this day, defensive coordinator down in New Mexico, I believe. And Rocky was my coordinator, my secondary coach for a couple years there in Wyoming, and had a huge impact on me. The toughest damn dude you've ever, we loved him. We hated him, but we loved him. And, you know, he always kept it really real with you. He was always very honest. Didn't always like that, but you, at the end of the day, you respected that. And so I took that with me. You know, he sat me down as a senior. I wasn't playing very good. Probably thought I was better than I was. You know, benched me and put in a sophomore, Troy Robinson, and I went up to his office, shut the door, sat down. What the hell are you doing, coach? You know, and he goes, he just said, you stink. he said, you're playing like crap. And I said, and I knew it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I was going to go up there and get my job back, right? Just tell him he was full of crap. But he told me, yeah, you stink. You know, here's what you need to do. You can either start practicing better and playing better and preparing better, or, you know, get your job back. And being a senior, you know, I was like, okay. But I always appreciated and respected that honesty. And so he was a huge mentor, you know, early on, you know, as a player. And then Ted Tolner at Southern Cal, and then having an opportunity to be around Jimmy Johnson at the University of Miami.
Yeah.
And just a master, I mean, football coach, but just a super, like the psychological part and the way he dealt with those players down there and the way he could motivate, unbelievable. And Dave Wanstead was on that staff. Of course, Butch, you know, who we both worked for, you know, there at UNC, Butch was the D-line coach on that staff. And that's where those relationships were built, you know, down the road. And, but, you know, Steve Logan, you know, had, you know, ECU, you know, Steve taught us all that you could work hard and smart.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to stay, you know, 18 hours in the office. Larry Coyer, who you know, and I know, and love, the Coy dog. Now, Coy didn't believe that way, and we love Coy, right? I mean, he was unbelievable. I mean, you talk about one of the finest football coaches I've ever been around. But you know, Steve and them would be out the door right after practice. They'd get their stuff done, and they'd be gone, and we'd still be grinding that film up there. Bobby Babich and myself and Theo, you know, and I asked Larry one time, "Hey, are we going to watch film tomorrow?" And remember you smoked that pipe, and there's supposed to be no smoking in the building there.
Yeah, he wouldn't quit smoking.
No. He said, hey, I'm keeping this. They can run me out of here or let me smoke this pipe. You know, he knew he wasn't going anywhere. You know, so he just challenged him. I said, we going to watch film tomorrow? Larry goes, what kind of question is that? He pulled that. Hey, Bubba, what kind of question is that? And I said, well, if you plan on it, we better shut this thing down because that bulb's about ready to burn out on that machine because we've been going so damn long, you know. But he had a huge, you know, and to this day, I stay in touch with Coach Coyer. And he would come and visit. He came when I was at Chicago. You mentioned the Bears and my last stint, you know, as a coach in the NFL. And, you know, I retired after that 2020 season. He came up and drove up from Indy and visited us during training camp and spent a couple days. It was so awesome. Being around him again, you talk about a tough guy and a grinder. I mean, salt of the earth, right?
Yep.
But that was a great experience. Learned a lot. 10 years under Butch. Learned a ton, you know, from Butch. And I'm missing guys I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody, but I was very, very fortunate, very blessed. You know, when I left UNC and, you know, Norv, when we got fired at Cleveland, Norv got me on at the Raiders, that 2-year stint out in Oakland. And then when I came back to, you know, didn't have a job once we got fired after those 2 years, and went down there with Butch and you and rest of those guys, and had a great experience there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable place. And then John Harbaugh got the Ravens job and offered me an opportunity to go up there and coach the DBs. And I love college football and all that stuff, but just the recruiting and the academics. Yeah. And once you, because I didn't know any better, 17 years at the college level.
Yeah.
You know, and then got my first taste at the Browns, you know, with Butch. Just without the recruiting and the off season, you know, when summer came around, you were on vacation, you turned that phone off. You could totally unplug. Different, as you know, obviously, college. And I can't even imagine right now with the portal and NIL and all the stuff that's going on, talking to the guys that I know and that are still doing it at the collegiate level, they never have a day off. I mean, it is constant. And so having that opportunity to go back with the Ravens and Harbaugh, and he gave me an unbelievable opportunity there. And we had such a great team. You mentioned Eddie Reed and Ray Lewis and Suggs, and got to coordinate that defense in 2011. And went to the AFC Championship game. Unfortunately, we got beat by the Patriots. And the next day I get a phone call, and a day after that I'm interviewing for the head job at Indy. So the stars lined up. I was at the right place at the right time and was blessed and fortunate to get that opportunity. And had 6 great years there in Indy. You know, the story, you know, what we went through in 2012 and, you know, when I was diagnosed and came down with the leukemia diagnosis and such. But I just very, very grateful for, you know, all the men that I've been around and the player, you know, the players. And like I mentioned early on, it was always about, you know, building those relationships and building that trust and trying to be as honest and upfront and forthright, you know, as you could be, you know, with the guys. And but I was very, very lucky.
Yes, sir. Well, who do you think you learned the most defense from through your career, Larry and Butch?
Yeah, both those guys, you know, Butch, you know, being a defensive coach and then the head coach there, you know, at UNC and Cleveland and Miami, learned a ton from all those guys. Jimmy, you know, Johnson, even that one year I was down there with him. And then we kind of ran the same package. But I got stuff from every, you know, all the jobs that you had, Jeff, all the jobs that I've had, you know, you kind of pick and choose, kind of develop your own philosophy, way of doing things, way of thinking, but got stuff from everybody. But Larry was like, is from a fundamental and technique standpoint, you know, it's one thing, you know, the X's and O's, but Larry could coach every position,
right,
on the defense, you know, from interior defensive line play, outside linebacker, inside linebacker, secondary. I mean, he was brilliant, you know, and such a smart coach. And he was great with remember how great he was with the players?
Oh, yeah. You know,
those players, they'd kill for that. And he was tougher than damn, I mean, mean as a damn rattlesnake, right? But it was hard on us as assistants and hard on those players, but we knew he loved us.
Yeah, he wanted me to put them through a circuit on Thursdays, you know, like it's pretty much a grinder now. Yeah, this was Thursday, but I said, hey, Larry, if that's what you want to do, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. And then I would get a kick out of him. He would be out there chattering the whole practice like an outfielder, you know, during a baseball game or something, you know, it seemed like he was always talking. He was a real interesting guy.
And our guys,
was he there one season or two?
Huh?
Was he there one season or two seasons with us?
Maybe just one.
Yeah, I think it might've just been one, that 2-9 season where we lost our quarterback.
Yeah. He came over from Ohio State.
Yeah.
He was there and came over from there. I think it was just the one. I remember one time one of our guys messed up, and remember how he'd sit all the way down the field, get on the knee and have his hat turned around backwards and pipe in his mouth and, you know, have it, have an angle where he could see everything, you know, 20, 25 yards down the field on the sideline, whistle blow, something happened. We gave up something in practice and he'd have that pipe in his back pocket, flip that hat back around and be running full speed.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, hey, do we actually meet around here or do you guys just wait, you know, for things to happen out here and me to come fix all this stuff? You know, do you guys actually meet with these guys? And Bubba was the word, Bobby Babich, you know, because Larry's loved the inside backers and Bobby had those inside backers. So he caught the brunt of most of it. He used to love when Coach Corey would come and say, Bub, I'm going to take the backers, you know, today, Mark Libiano and those guys, he'd come, I'm going to take the backers today, run individual. Bob is like, oh, thank God. You can have them the whole day, Coach.
Babich had a good NFL career also. I mean, I followed him for a little while, and then I think his son coaches in the NFL, right?
Still at Buffalo.
Okay.
Yeah, Junior, Bobby Junior is a great coach. Yeah. And Bobby had a phenomenal, Bobby Senior had a phenomenal career. Did a great, unbelievable.
Yeah, I think we have a – I think, you know, my dad was a high school coach too, so I think we have a common person that we know as well, coaching Fred Pugach. Fred played for my dad in high school, and I just took my dad back for a Hall of Fame that his 75 team was put in, and Fred was there, so we mentioned your name a couple times. But
Who we went back – that's who we went back because that's who Larry was – coaching with that member at Ohio State. Pug and him were on the same staff.
Right.
Remember we all got in that van with Coach Coyer and took a road trip to spring practice to meet with the staff at Ohio State. That was fun, boy.
It was fun.
Yeah. What a great time that was. Remember we got to Ohio State, he made me put some gear on. Remember where he goes, racquetball courts? He loved to play racquetball.
Yeah, yeah.
And he hated it when I beat him on that court. He would rather die, you know, than get beat.
Yeah.
First thing we did, he goes, hey, bud, you better be on your game today. I said, what are you talking about? We got right out of that van, put gym clothes on, and went and played Pug and somebody else. You know, I think the special teams coach at Ohio State before we did any ball.
Yeah.
He's like, we can't lose this thing, bud. We can't lose this game.
Yeah, well, Fred was definitely a competitive guy, and, you know, my dad absolutely loves him. So, you know, your daughter Taylor very eloquently, you know, wrote about the 10 things that she learned from her father, which, you know, I was so moved by that. You know, as coaches, you know, we hope that all of our children could be so influenced and so perceptive. And you can tell how intelligent she is just by reading that. And, of course, also the love and appreciation was so evident as well. But I just wanted to kind of go through those things because I know these are all the things that you stand for. And a lot of these, of course, are what contributed to your success. So, you know, number one was grit. And, you know, she talked about sticking to the process and showing up every day for a purpose for those who you love and your goals. And, you know, you got to put in the time and to overcome obstacles and, you know, you got to live in your vision. So can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So you remember when that, you know, Angela Duckworth came out and wrote that book, you know, called Grit. And we all saw a video and, you know, it really struck me, you know, that all the things that you just talked to about the perseverance, the resolve, the stick-to-itiveness, and because we're all so quick to just want to give up and, you know, things get really, really hard and things get difficult and, you know, you just tend to throw the towel in too quick, especially nowadays, but you know, going through stuff and, you know, life's hard, right, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
I used to tell the guys all the time, as soon as you figure that out, it starts getting a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, but to accomplish, you know, anything and to overcome, you know, circumstances and overcome adversity, you know, you got to have that. You got to have some grit. And, you're going to get knocked down. That's okay. And you're going to make mistakes and you're going to fail. But as long as you learn from those and you keep going and keep moving forward and it doesn't matter. I mean, to me, that was the biggest thing, because it's never going to be perfect and the game's never going to be perfect. And guys are going to make mistakes. The best players in the world, right? The best players at the professional level, it doesn't matter. But as long as they have that grit and they have that perseverance and they have that resolve, because that's just the game. I mean, I always said we're coaching and playing a kid's game at the end of the day. And then there's going to be some real life stuff that's going to hit you right between the eyes.
Right.
And all these lessons that we've learned, you know, playing the greatest team sport ever, you know, football at whatever level, we learn so much about, you know, not only teamwork and being a part of something, you know, that's bigger than ourselves, but we learn that grit, and we learn to overcome, you know, adversity and then the living vision and not circumstances, you know, that came about, you know, our good buddy Kevin Elko, you know, talked to me, and especially when I was going through my ordeal in Indy with the cancer stuff, you know, we were having a talk one time and it, you know, talked to me about living vision, not circumstances, and living that is just, you know, when I was going through the cancer, my vision was that my circumstances were leukemia, right?
Right.
But the vision was that, hey, because I just got to Indy, I just got the head coach, I just got the dream job here, you know, what you worked 28 years of your life for, to have an opportunity then to see it to the, you know, fruition and get the job. And 6 months later, you're sitting in a hospital bed, you know, with a bunch of stuff getting pumped into your body, chemo and things like that. And you're just, you know, wondering, you know, why, you know, why does stuff like this happen? And then it gets revealed to you throughout that. But I remember him telling me, hey, okay, the vision was that I was going to beat cancer, be around for a long time for my wife and my kids, walk two more daughters down the aisle, dance at their weddings, and raise that Lombardi trophy. And forget the circumstances. That's what I focused on, you know, was that vision. And that was from day one, you know, we built that program, you know, on a solid foundation. We built it on rock and not sand, because we knew tough days were coming. Little did I know, 6 months after we talked about that stuff, you know, that I'd be sitting there getting removed from the team and going through what I had to go through. But I think that's really, really important for all of us, especially for young people, is, you know, get a vision, you know, in your mind, regardless of what you're going through, of what you want to do and how you want to do it and where you want to be, and focus on that, you know, focus on that vision and don't worry about the circumstances, you know, because we know circumstances don't make you, they reveal you. You know, and having to go through some tests and some tough times, they reveal a lot about yourself.
No doubt. And, you know, when you're in a hospital, I've been there a few times, and you're going through something tough, you got to rely back on that grit, you know, and at the same time, you have to be patient. And that's what I learned. And, you know, I know that you went through that, you went through something down in Miami too, when you had the heart deal. And, you know, about a year ago, I had bradycardia, and I was just riding in my car, and I actually had to get some kind of a basic test, and you know, I had my heart rate was 30, and they're like, "Why is your heart rate 30?" I'm like, "I have no idea." I was like, "I can't be in that good of shape." And so I called Bo. You know, Bo's a paramedic, and he works in the emergency room and all that stuff. You know, my son and everything. So when I got home, he goes, "Dad, you know, got to take you to the cardiologist. You know, you got the electrical block. You're going from second to third degree block." And so I went to the cardiologist, and they can only get my, you know, my heart rate up to 53 on a treadmill, put something on me, called me back to the emergency room later on. So my heart rate was 25 for 4 days, because I had to wait till Monday to get the surgery, to get the pacemaker. So, you know, and I've been great since. And, you know, my problem was all electrical. But you just never know. You know, I mean, I had no idea that this that I even had a problem at all. And nobody can even tell me to this day, you know, why that occurred. But at the same time, it was you who I was thinking about when I was in the hospital, just so you know, that it was you and it was Jesus Christ. And it was I had no symptoms. The nurses were there. You know, they told the pastor that came to see me on a Sunday, "We don't understand this guy. He's like not even human. There's something wrong." So he's, you know, he's got no symptoms. He's not dizzy. He's whatever, but his heart rate's 25. But, you know, my faith, I just never felt threatened for some reason. I felt like, you know, God was there with me and my family was there. And, you know, I just went ahead and got it done on Monday and I'm fine now. You know, I'm doing well. Working out, you know, two times a day and feeling good. So I just wanted you to know that the scripture that you sent me that one time when I had that melanoma and, you know, that stuck with me that whole time and helped me through that as well. So just know that.
I remember you telling me about that stuff, and I remember the cancer stuff, the melanoma, but I go back to like that why me.
Yeah.
You know, we had just lost a game to Jacksonville, a heartbreaker, the third game of the year, that first year in Indy. And the next day I was going to get some blood work. I remember we took the lead. Andrew took us down the field. We got the lead back with 50 seconds left, 52 seconds left in that game. And we kick off and Blaine Gabbert hits Cecil Shorts on a skinny post and we lose the game. 52 seconds. We were, you know, and go in that locker room, said some things to the team. And Robert Mathis, I called the guys up and said, "Hey, no pity parties in football and there's no pity parties in life.
Yeah.
You know, let's man up. We'll come in tomorrow. We'll look at the tape and we move on." And that was our bye week coming up. And that's when I got diagnosed. But I remembered those words the minute the doc told me, you know, you have leukemia, you have cancer, you know, you never think you're going to hear anything like that.
Yeah.
But that stuck in my head and went right back to, you know, I almost went to that, you know, really, why me? Why now?
Right.
Type of deal. But then I just remember what Robert said about no pity parties in life. No pity parties in football, you know. So I never, like you, I was like, this is a fluke, you know. Not once did it cross my mind that I was not going to beat that, you know. Right. And that's because of faith. That's because of family, you know. All the things you talk about. No, I had no cholesterol issues, no heart, no family history about nothing when I had that heart deal down at UM. You know, in 1996, 36 years old, always been in great shape. But, you know, is it a sign or is it a test?
Exactly.
Right? So,
right.
Like if you don't have that grit, or that mental toughness, that resolve, then you're going to say, it's a sign, wasn't meant to be. You know, I guess this is over, you know?
Yeah. I'm a better man now. That's all I know. I know I'm a much better man. You know, after going through those things, and I cherish every moment, every day, every minute with my wife, every minute with my dogs. I mean, everything. So,
You remember before, because it gives you such great perspective, right? Because before, I mean, you got two amazing children. You know, I got my daughter. Everybody's. Remember, we used to say, you know, we have to.
Yeah.
Like I got to take the kids to.
Yeah.
School. I've got to take the kids to practice. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. And then you go through something, you know, that could be a little bit life-changing.
Yeah.
And now we say we get to.
Right.
You know,
right.
It used to be I have to, but it gives you great perspective, you know, and just how fragile, you know, life is and just how good we have it, you know.
Well, let's go to number two, presence. 60 minutes is all you got, one play at a time. Don't judge. Be present in each moment of your life. Let go of self-judgment. And I've heard that a few times from you, so Anything you want to add there?
Yeah, that process, yeah, that presence, you know, that process of the game was, you know, 60 minutes, all you got, one play at a time, don't judge, just what you said. And we all understand the first three elements of that. And that no judgment thing, that's like, okay, good play, move on. Yeah. Bad play, move on. Yeah. Don't look at the scoreboard. Down 28, who cares? You can't score 28 on one play.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just have to go to the next play, and you can't judge and sit there and say, you know, in your regular life, you make mistakes, you stumble, easy to fall back and judge yourself, judge others. But that was our calling card there, you know, at Indy. And we beat that home from day one, right. That whole process deal. And that's why, you know, you're down 28 to Kansas City in the third quarter of a playoff game. And then all of a sudden it just takes one play, right? And momentum is a crazy, crazy thing, as you know, and I know, being in this business for so long. It just takes one play and you know, a strip sack by Mathis, an unbelievable play by Luck, and next thing you know, that whole thing turns, you know, and you're down 28 and you win the game by a point, 45-44. And never was process and being present more prevalent than that game. So
yeah.
And that's huge, because we taught our kids that it's just everyday life. It's a process, and you have to trust that process. And when things don't go your way, it's so easy to go to judgment and whatever and lose that mindset, that grit mindset, and just say, hey, maybe this wasn't supposed to be. But I think that can be applied to, you know, just anything, everyday life.
How about number three, optimism? So what you've been through, your circumstances don't make you, they reveal you. Take your pain and obstacles and transform through it. So those are the things we've been talking about.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's so... I guess you could say succinctly put those things in that little summary.
Yeah.
Number four was vision. Live in vision, not circumstance, which you covered. And of course, you know, she talked about your attitude now after going through what you've been through, always being the luckiest man, you know, luckiest man alive every day, and the fact that life is a gift and all those good things. So the next thing would be family. So, you know, maybe talk a little bit about the family concept and relationship to coaching. And then, and I know that was big with you. And then also, what's going on with your family now?
Yeah, you know, Tina, as you know, our wives, you know, we sacrifice a lot, but nobody sacrifices more than our family and our children. Yeah. And it's always about our significant other. And Tina was just amazing in the development and rearing of our girls. And, you know, like you, when you reached out to me about this and you told me about those things, like when I first read those, and Taylor, like, you never think your kids are like picking up anything you're trying to teach them, right? Especially when they're young, and then they hit those teenage years and they don't want to listen to you. They don't like you no more. They don't want to be around you. And then you get past that. But then, you know, you read something like this and you say, well, maybe all that time and effort that you put into family, maybe it paid off, you know? Right. And, you know, I remember, like, Taylor, when we left Miami to go to Cleveland, Tori and Tara, and we go up to Cleveland, Taylor, we all made a bunch of moves. And then she started high school there in Strongsville, Ohio, in Cleveland there. And then we got let go there, and we went out to Oakland, and then she had to go enter Monta Vista. So Strongsville was about 1,000 students.
Yeah.
So we drop her off school you know, Monta Vista, 5,000. And like, she didn't want to get out of the car the first day of school. Mom, Tina took her.
Yeah.
And she finally just had to tell her, hey, get the heck out of the car, Taylor. I'm not taking you back home. You got to do this. And it you know, obviously it worked out, but she's there a year and a half. Then we got let go at Oakland. We got to come to Chapel Hill. So three high schools for my middle daughter. I wasn't very popular, you know, in the household, but Tina made it all happen from they were little. And
yeah.
And she always had to work too, everywhere we went, because we weren't making the money that all these guys that we make now and have made, but you know, but she was just unbelievable. But she always made it, you know, important for those kids to know what I did and what, and be around the football stuff. And we try to take advantage of every opportunity, you know, we could to keep them involved. And because I missed a lot.
Yeah.
As everybody knows, I'm not saying I've been through anything that anybody else in the coaching profession hasn't been through. I mean, you sacrifice a lot and you miss a lot. But at the same time, I credit my wife, Tina, the unbelievable job that she did, and, you know, getting those girls ready and bringing them to the games and being around, you know, the team and all the different schools we were at, and, you know, and then in professional football and staying connected like that. But, you know, my late father-in-law, Ron Hefner, Tina's dad, my father-in-law, Ron, he passed away. I don't know if you remember when we were together in 07. You know, back, and we just got our brakes beat off at Wake Forest, and
yeah,
and came home, and that next morning we woke up to a bad phone call Tina did. But he always talked about faith and family, you know, and how important that was. And it wasn't always football for him. He thought I was crazy doing what I was doing, because he came to Chapel Hill to see us, and he'd come on a Wednesday, and I didn't see him till after the game. You know, right. He's like, hey, is there any more of these jobs opened up? Boy, it sure seems like a really good way to make a living, you know?
Yeah.
But it was always about that. And again, I credit Tina and the job that she did. And again, that part of it is always, again, I feel very, very blessed to, they don't now that they're retired, they don't have a team. So now it's just, you know, I got them all out here in Boise, Idaho, and
yeah,
Tara raising three granddaughters, Addison, Avery, and Zoe. And the two oldest ones are twins. They're going to be 16 here pretty soon, and sophomores in high school. And Zoe's going to be 10 here this month. And then I got a grandson finally, Bear Charles, and he just turned two. So we're living a blessed life out here, Jeff. Very, very lucky.
That's awesome, man. Glad to hear. Well, the next one is change is constant, which you just covered some of that. Fan versus life of football, she talked about, and people not understanding the life of football, you know, the football fans not understanding that. It's a business with sharp edges, and kids must adapt. But what she said was it taught her to appreciate whoever she was with and wherever she was. So I thought that was great.
No, you just, it was, again, you don't, sometimes you don't have the conversations probably until you, like, your daughter writes something like this, or you have a discussion, yeah, or and you don't take the time to really, you know, like we talked about, be present,
right?
You know, that intentional and deliberate and actually listen and see what's going on. But going through, they've always told me, you know, they hated me back then, you know, when dropped her off at Chapel Hill, and it's her third high school. And it's like, you know how hard that is on teenage kids. I mean, I can't even imagine now how hard it is with everything that's going on and social media and all that right. stuff. But I always told them, I mean, it was adapt or die.
Yeah.
Can I stay, Dad, at Monta Vista? Can I stay here with friends and finish this, you know, my senior year, Bubba? I said, one thing Tina and I decided when we got into this thing together was that there was going to be some moves. We knew there was going to be some moves and some change, but we weren't going to ever leave the kids behind. Now, she stayed behind sometimes to finish a semester, you know, finish the second half of the school year or whatever, you know, so we had to be separated some in those regards. But the kids, we said, we're never going to leave you behind. And I just told them, it's adapt or die. Keep your head down, mind your own business, walk through them doors, get your work home, you know, and then get your work done and then get home. But this is how it is. And it's going to help you. It's going to help you down the road, you know, learning that, how to adapt and that grit and building that stuff. And again, I wasn't very popular back then, but to hear them now say those life lessons, you know, that we learned and having to go through all that change and all those different environments and adapt and, you know, build new relationships and make new friends. And I mean, you and I both know how hard that is, and it kills you. It kills you inside to have to do it, but it's just life. That's how it was. And they forged through it. And all of them to this day, you know, they understand that life's tough and, you know, and it's hard, but they have, you know, all that stuff inside them, all that past experience, to know that it's going to be okay. And they're going to get through it, and they're not alone.
No doubt. Well, number seven is control the controllable. She talked about chaos and opinions and criticism, and then you just lean into what you can control yourself, which is awesome. Paganoism right there.
Yeah, so, I can't claim it. I got it from somewhere, but I used to tell those media guys, or tell my family, you know, or I tell those media guys, I said, you can fire me, but you can't eat me. You know, or I'd tell them they can fire me, but they can't eat me.
Yeah.
So we all know what we signed up for, right?
Oh yeah.
We know what the expectations are.
Yeah.
So control what you can control. And that's your attitude, your energy, your enthusiasm, your passion,
right?
All that stuff. Cause that stuff's contagious.
No doubt.
And if we sit there, and I used to beg my wife and kids, don't read, don't listen to the radio. And they couldn't do it. And all the time they go, these guys, what are they talking about? Why would they say such things? I said, that's their job. Right. I said, I can't get into it with those guys. And I used to just kill them with kindness, Jeff.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't respond to all the criticism, and it killed them. They hated it.
Yeah.
it was like I was sitting there leaving them with hot coals in their lap, because they say, hey, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. And I said, yeah, you're right. I got to be better. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I stink at that. I got to work on that. And it would just kill them, you know, because they wanted more. And I made some mistakes, obviously, along the way, and learned some tough lessons on responding to that stuff. But again, there's going to be a lot of things that are out of our control. And we're just going to have to deal with. But, you know, your attitude, like I said, your mindset, how you treat people. I mean, how you respond.
Right.
All those kind of things is just, and that's easy. That's just, I used to tell the guys all the time. I said, some of you guys, I think you get up out of bed and you just say, hey, look, I'm going to go in and see how miserable I can make Coach today. Is that what you guys do? You know, we've always had those guys, you know, that just come in are miserable. And I said, man, you guys, we got another day. You know, tomorrow's not promised. We get today. So let's kick today's butt, you know, and do it with a great attitude and enthusiasm. Harbaugh used to say enthusiasm second to none, you know, unbeknownst to mankind. Right. And he was right. They were right. You know, because it lifts other people up, and it lifts yourself up. And we all can get out of bed every morning and decide we can control our attitude and decide, hey, look, I'm gonna be a positive person today, you know, and I'm gonna encourage others and try to do the right thing. And I know I'm gonna make some mistakes, but we can control that.
Well, yeah, as a strength coach, you'd see those guys every day all year round. In the summer, you got no vacation, so you know, of course. you know, you got to find all kinds of ways to keep that enthusiasm going, you know? So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. There.
You were unbelievable. You were unbelievable. I credit the only reason we won is because of you. Because of that mindset and the way you developed those guys and your selflessness and the way you served those players. I know why they loved you and to this day keep in touch with you. And to because, I mean, you built it because we didn't have the best, you know, we supposedly got everybody's seconds and thirds there, right?
Yeah, we had to develop people, no doubt about
that.
But you developed them
not only from a physical standpoint, but right here.
Yeah.
To where they were like unbreakable.
Yeah, we had some great kids who really worked hard.
Oh, man.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, I appreciate that. And then the quote there is, be where your feet are and do your job. Be present in the moment. So that's another one. Yeah, I love that.
Because you know how the distractions, especially nowadays, with the kids and everything that's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and they got not one, but two, maybe three phones, especially in the NFL, three different cell phones. They got all this stuff going on. That was just like when you enter the building, just be present, be intentional, be deliberate about everything we do. And then when you leave here, because there's a lot of stuff going on outside that building.
Yes.
That you can bring in there.
Yeah.
And you're going to get sideways. You there's no way that you're going to be effective and do your job. And I don't care what you do.
Yeah.
Because we all got stuff going on. We all got stuff going on at home. Whatever. There's a bunch of stuff going on. And if you bring that to work, boy, you can tell in a heartbeat. And that's going through your mind. There's no way you can be present. You can be intentional. So that whole be where your feet are, where just, hey, whatever it is, if you get a pad on the side of the door, the entrance, you know, you punch your code in, or you got a key fob and it lets you in. I used to say, let that be the deal. Okay, look, you're here. Be where your feet are. Be present. Try to put all that down for right now. Not that it's not important. It's your life. It's your livelihood. It's your wife. It's your kids. It's whatever you got going on. Mom, dad, brother, sister, all the stuff, right? Pulling it at these guys. Just put it down for the next whatever. Yeah. And then when you leave, you know, and you exit that door and that thing clicks, then you pick up that stuff again. We never drop that, you know, full time or forever, but if you want to prepare and you know, put yourself in the best possible position to succeed on Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Thursday, whatever it is at any level.
Yeah.
You have to be present. You have to be intentional. And I learned that at home, Jeff, you know, with Tina over the years and my kids, because we'd bring work home.
Oh yeah.
And it was a lesson for myself, you know, and we had to recruit and do all that stuff, but she would tell me all the time, you're here, but you're not here. I'd be like, huh? What are you talking about? So even before we even know what be where your feet are, what that meant, that just being present and just a better listener and all that stuff. But it's hard not to do that.
Yeah, my wife's famous quote to me is, what did I just say?
Huh?
Yeah, so I got to make sure I'm listening.
Yeah.
The next one was belief. You know, of course, the mindset, the attitude. And she talked about when you talked to her, when you got the diagnosis of leukemia and you told her, don't worry, I got this. And you did have it. And so she mentioned the power of the mind to heal. And wow, you know, what a powerful statement that is.
Faith is believing in what you can't see.
Yeah.
And the reward for believing is you'll get to see it. Right. We use that all the time over at Indy. And obviously, you know, during my deal and, you know, anybody like when you went through your, you know, circumstances and,
Yeah.
The melanoma thing, your heart issue, you know in your mind, but you got to make those loved ones around you. Cause I didn't want them to worry. I didn't want my daughters to sit there and worry and my wife to worry and my mom and dad, you know? And so for them, and you, cause you know, they're going to, for them, it was, I got to, and I did. And it just, she picked up on that. And, as I said, this is done. This is already beat, you know, this is already beat. This is just a minor deal. And we're going to get through that. And it wasn't, you know, and again, I just going through all that we went through all those years, you know, of the ups and downs, you know, of just what football teaches you and coaching and winning games, losing games, some of the devastating losses, the amazing wins. But it just teaches us so much that, you know, with faith, with family, football, whatever, you can get through anything, you know, and you got to have that mindset. You have to have that belief. And hopefully that, you know, my girls and my loved ones, they all have that, you know, as well, because it's in the players. I told them, I said, it's coming. Yeah. I don't know when and I don't know where, but the circumstances, the adversity, it's coming.
Right.
You know, so well,
my family was with me that for the last deal that I had, you know, over the weekend and so forth. And then we were waiting for Monday. And so I told them we're having a tailgate party Sunday. So we had a tailgate party in the hospital before my surgery. So, you know, I believe it's all attitude, you know, so that helped everybody.
Yeah.
Then number nine, you know, two more, you get legacy, you know, leave something much bigger than yourself. And all I got to say about that is, you know, I've been through in my career, I always say penthouse, outhouse, everywhere in between. And I know within myself that I've done enough to leave something, and that brings peace to me, you know, and I don't really care what some fan thinks or some critic thinks or, you know, people that are always out there trying to celebrate somebody's failure. You know, I mean, I don't have time for those people. You know, the legacy that you're leaving is just totally incredible. And you know, I just want to commend you on all your accomplishments and your legacy. So, you know, I'm glad you're enjoying life right now and sitting back on it and just enjoying it and doing your, what's that thing called?
33rd team.
Yeah. Check that out.
Former GMs, head coaches,
players,
personnel guys, keep us connected. I feel very grateful to Mike Tannenbaum and the people that started the 33rd team, and good group of guys. And again, it keeps you connected and get to talk, you know, because you know how hard it is when you don't have a team anymore.
Yep.
You know, I mean,
yep.
You know why players and get sideways and coaches get sideways, because where do you get that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you better have your next life's work, right, you know, ready to roll. Cause like retirement, you're doing what you're doing now, and it's keeping you connected and keeping you busy and you're impacting lives still. And it was really hard for me early on until some of these things came about, and you have that next life's work and you have purpose, you know, cause
yeah, I think, well, as coaches, we always want to impact people somehow. It's just too deep in you that you got to do it. And that's the way I feel. I was ready to go down to the beach, you know, chill out at Emerald Isle, but something hit me, said, you ain't done yet, buddy. So, you know, that's, you know, we had a guy on last week that played at ECU, and he heard a podcast two podcasts ago with Pastor Gene that I bring on, and basically said he wanted to recommit his life to Christ. And that was just, you know, just something incredible. Just so happy to be able to help him, you know, through what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to do. And so, you know, the last one that we'll leave everybody with, I guess, is live full out. And the fact that your daughter called you a child at heart and you love to have fun and you love to laugh and, you know, all that kind of things that I've seen in you, particularly like a couple of things like where you, when you wrestled Jerry Dillon in your backyard, for instance, and, you know, when we had a lot of celebrations after big wins and we just had a great time. And I always had such a great time around you and Fleming, you know, because, you would just be, you know, making it happen. I remember I wrestled Fleming in my kitchen one time, broke all the dishes and Michelle.
So, and Leslie came to Boise. That's where we met.
Okay.
We were both first time, you know, full time assistants under Skip Hall at BSU in 1987.
Yeah.
He was on the offense side of the ball and I was on the defensive side, and we connected from the first day.
Right.
And, you know, just best friends, best man at my wedding. And yeah, we wrestled a bunch, you know, we got found in the front yard. She was out of town. Les was out of town and we went out and we finished at his place and we were in the front yard, rolled over some sapling that they just planted out front of the condominium complex that he lived in, and security came because somebody called security on us. And he's like, what are you guys doing? He goes, you got to get out of the front. You got to go. So we went upstairs and moved all the furniture and proceeded to, you know, keep the match going, you know, up there. So unbelievable great times.
How about when you and Jags dove in the water, Brook Valley, and got a bunch of golf balls out of there?
And I took my youngest brother-in-law who was visiting, little Timmy Hefner, you know, he's not little anymore, but we were in that mud and got 3-4 buckets of those golf balls. What was that, Brook Valley?
Yeah.
Oh Lord, how'd we get here? How'd we make it, huh? Someone was looking out after us because a lot of not very smart decisions, you know. Yeah. Along the way, but.
Well, that before I close, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about defense. You know, East Carolina's, you know, having a pretty good year. They're 6-4. They lost a tough one to Cincinnati. Got Houston this week. And, you know, this defensive coordinator here at ECU, I think he's made a difference. There's a lot of pressure. And I think, he plays some man. Just generally speaking, you know, what kind of defense do you think is more effective now as a base defense? And, what are a few thoughts you have there now in relationship of, you know, how to stop these high-powered offenses with mobile quarterbacks? And, do you spy somebody on the UNC quarterback, Drake May? Or, you know, how do you – he's going to get a first down one way or the other. So, I mean, it's – give me a few of your thoughts there.
Yeah, you watch these guys, and you watch Justin Fields the last month.
Yeah,
in the National Football League, what he's done in Chicago.
Right.
I mean, and he's 6'3", 235, 240 pounds, and he's faster. He broke one the other day, and there wasn't one Detroit Lion defender that could catch him and go 60 yards. 147 yesterday. 160 some the week, 180 some the week before. Watching these athletic guys in college, I mean, you better have a bunch of speed.
Yeah.
The game used to be like when I was at the Raiders with Mr. Davis.
Yeah.
And Al Davis was like, it's a big man's game.
Yeah.
You know, you had to be fast, but it was always a big man's game. And Coach Parcells and remember all those guys, I mean, those Mike backers were 250, 260 pounds. And because it was, like you said, it was a two back, you know, there was never a time anybody was in one back. Everybody had a fullback in the backfield and played with multiple tight ends. And now, you know, fullbacks are extinct. You see some of the Kyle Shanahan, you know, he uses one, you know, in San Francisco. You know, Mike McDaniels goes down to the Dolphins and he's having great success. You'll see a fullback there. So it's all about speed now because everybody's playing. And like base defense, we were a 3-4. I was a 3-4 in at the Ravens. We did it at Indy. I was a 4-3 under Jimmy Johnson before, you know, I got with some 3-4 guys, Rob and Rex Ryan, those type of things. But you could get up, but that was your base defense. And if you played like 1,000 plays right now in the National Football League, and I'm sure it's just the same, you know, at the college level, you're never in base.
Yeah.
You know, so because you're not going to see 21 personnel, you know, two backs and one tight end, or 22 personnel, two backs and two tight ends, maybe short yardage goal line situation.
Yeah.
But we would only play between 20 and 23% of base defense. Yeah. And the rest of the time you're in nickel defense, you're in sub, you know, five DBs, six DBs, depending on, you know, the down and distance, especially third down, because in college is the same thing. They're spreading you out pillar to post. They're making you defend, you know, every blade of grass, and the guys that, you know, are running the offense, the quarterbacks that are running it, and the players that they're handing it to, and the players that they're throwing it to.
Yeah.
My Lord. I mean, so you can see what's happening, like in the National Football League, you know, everybody's going like the linebackers of old. You know, you got all these athletic dudes now, you know, the two guys in Tampa, you know, Lamonte David and Devin White, I mean, Patrick Queen at the Raven. You got 220, 225 pound linebackers now that are 4'4", 4'5".
Right.
So that, to your point about spying a guy like May, you know, at UNC, Hendon Hooker or Justin Fields in the National Football League, they are a nightmare.
Yeah.
They are a nightmare because when things break down, and they start to take off Patrick Mahomes to extend plays, most of those guys are still got their eyes down. Like Pat Mahomes, he isn't thinking to run like Justin Fields. He's not the same type of athlete. He's good enough to extend plays, but he's always got his eyes down the field. And he's got such great arm. Oh, excuse me. He's got such great arm talent that he can get the ball and make all those off schedule throws. And it's all like baseball throws. It's like shortstops and third basemen making great fielding plays and then these contorted throws to first base. I mean, it's scary.
Yeah.
But you have to have a bunch of speed on the field. You got to have great corners, you know, so when you need to lock them down and play some man coverage, and then the pass rushers, you know, you need the big uglies, you know, inside for a couple rundown, maybe first and second and 1-5, you know, and then you got to get them off the field and get them to buy into that. And then get your speed on the field and get the guys that can go hunt the quarterback. And otherwise, it's just, I'm really glad. I mean, to be a defensive coordinator right now. The only way you sign up, and I watched ECU the other day. They were out here playing BYU.
Yeah,
got a great win. What a great job those guys are doing, and a good looking football team. And that quarterback, what's that quarterback's name over there?
Holton Ahlers.
He's a good player, right?
Yeah, he is. He's a tough kid. He's hung in there, and he's got, you know, he got better every year, I think, and he makes good decisions, and he can throw the ball, and he's beat up, and he's still playing. He's tough. You know, I think he's got a shot at the next level, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I was impressed with the way that team played and you know, the effort and the, you know, tough physicality and the toughness that they showed. And because that's not easy making that trip across the country to go play at a place like that. And the only way I'd take a job is like if the guy said, hey, look, just hold them to 50 and we're good. Can you imagine? Can you imagine being able to live with yourself? But that's how it is. I mean, you see some of those scores and you're like, my Lord. And they're Ole Miss. And some of these teams are running a play every 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And you can't substitute.
Right. Yeah.
And you get a group on the field, and then to try to get guys, you know, fresh guys in the game, what a challenge that is. My Lord. Yeah. I'm glad we're doing stuff like this now.
Absolutely.
And we can sit back and just laugh and just like, holy heck. Thank God we ain't out there doing that.
I'm going to go to the game with John, Marcus Crandall and I, and John McMillan he used to come to the games with Danny Bersini. I don't know if you remember those guys. They came to all of our games. And John, he's got some seats up top and so forth. So Marcus Crandall and I are going to go to the Houston game with them this weekend. But
that'll be fun.
I'm just going to enjoy the fan life, brother.
What did Houston put up in that game, you said?
Oh, with SMU in Houston, it was 77-63. Yeah, so that's a basketball score, you know.
Oh, isn't it? God almighty.
But I'm going to go ahead and close it out here a minute. And I just wanted to thank you again. Really great having you on. It's great to talk to you. You know, Michelle and I, we travel all over the country now. We might come out west one of these days and check
please,
out.
Please do. You have to. Out there. You have to.
I'd love to see you.
Love to see you as well. And I appreciate you having me on. Got such great, great memories, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
ECU time in Chapel Hill. You talked about legacy, and the one you're leaving behind is unbelievable. And you continue to grow that. And we just always wanted to do something that, you know, will outlive you, right? And be around for much longer. But being able to serve and give back and help others, encourage others, and you know, that's what we're all put here to do, right? And
no doubt.
Remember what we said? I'm not the man I want to be, but I'm sure glad I'm not the man I used to be. You know.
Absolutely.
So just trying to grow. I appreciate you, brother.
Yes,
you
sir.
Better get out, say hi to Michelle. You better get out here and see us, okay?
All right, we'll do. This is Jeff Connors signing off for Absolute Empowerment and armoredlife.org. And remember, when you open the word, it opens you. God bless and see you next week.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on the Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at TheSportsObjective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!